Hey, this is Val. That was my best impression of Luke. And now I'll do my best impression of Aaron Sellers, because this week, Aaron Hedge and I flew solo on the radio and even learned how to use the KYRS soundboard. We talked about our coverage this week that included police accountability from a lot of different angles. In the first story, we talked about a sister's ongoing quest for transparency from the Spokane County prosecutor on a police shooting that killed her brother, and how now failed legislation could have helped provide another avenue for that transparency. Then we chatted about this week's wild Spokane Valley City Council meeting, where the council simultaneously said they wanted their police to help federal immigration deportation efforts, and they wanted to put a sales tax on the ballot to pay for more police. All that and more in this week's Free Range. I'm Valerie Osier. I'm with Range, and I'm here with Aaron Hedge, who is also with Range, and we are flying solo today. We just got trained by Dana, our brilliant station guru guy. I don't know what your job title is, but we just got trained on the board, and now we know how to use it, which is very exciting. Theoretically, we know how to use it. But
I feel very powerful.
Yeah. So Aaron Sellers is out today dealing with some washing machine stuff.
And new homeowner stuff.
They're
25. Mm-hmm. They bought a house.
We're so proud of them.
Yes.
Our little Aaron growing up. So today we're going to talk about Hedge's latest story. And then another story in Spokane Valley that kind of popped off on Tuesday night. So let's get started on the first one.
Published the story. Yeah, it was last night.
Whoops. Okay, yeah. So this story, Hedge was working on it for a while, about a man who was killed by Spokane County Sheriff's deputies, and how his sister is going through this process, the grieving process, and looking for answers of what happened when he was killed. And Hedge, what brought this story to your attention?
So in around the turn of the year in January, I was doing my first big story this year was about the city ombuds and how and a report that they gave that showed that some folks in there were some agencies within investigative.
Sorry, real quick. What's the ombuds thing?
Oh,
sorry.
The ombuds. Mm-hmm. So the Office of the Ombuds, mm-hmm. The Office of Police Ombuds is the mm-hmm. title, is basically it's a commission within the city of Spokane that it acts as like a bridge between communicating information about just police accountability. Mm-hmm. And they issue a report to a public body that's appointed by the city council, mm-hmm. Called the Ombuds Commission. Okay. And the idea is that they bring information that wouldn't otherwise be disclosed to the public, mm-hmm. out into the open. There's lots of restrictions around that. And they sit on a number of the internal bodies, mm-hmm. of the Spokane Police Department, and their representatives bring what information they can. And that information is negotiated with the police union, mm-hmm. to the commission, and then it becomes, mm-hmm. a public document, and they present it to the commission at a public meeting. And okay.
It's a method of police accountability, basically, or a sort of a layer of police accountability for the city.
Yeah, it's just like, well, I would say more like transparency.
Oh, okay.
They don't have any authority to ask for prosecutions or investigations or anything like that. But they just bring information that normally wouldn't make it, like, mm-hmm. without the ombuds, that wouldn't make it into the public's eye, into the light, basically. And while I was reporting on that, I met a lot of police accountability activists, mm-hmm. Those people included a number of family members, mm-hmm. of past victims of police violence in the city of Spokane and in the county. And one of those people was a woman named Dawn Hagel, whose brother Donald had about a year ago last weekend, mm-hmm. had been in a standoff with a SWAT team, mm-hmm. with the county sheriff's office, and he was, they were trying to execute a warrant mm-hmm. that was issued by Stevens County. Mm-hmm. And this happened in Deer Park. So it happened in Stevens County. Mm-hmm. The Stevens County Sheriff requested help from Spokane County Sheriff. Mm-hmm. And that's why Spokane County was there. But he wasn't cooperating. He mm-hmm. wouldn't come out of the house. He mm-hmm. they were there for several hours. I think it was about 4 hours. And eventually they wanted to get him out. And so, and he was refusing, and they knew that he had an object that was shaped like a gun. They knew that it was either a gun or it was a cigarette lighter. Mm-hmm. It was a cigarette lighter. And they fired chemical gases into the house, and that, mm-hmm. that didn't bring him out. They fired a flashbang grenade into the mm-hmm. house. That also did not bring him out. Mm-hmm. And so several deputies with the SWAT team mm-hmm. Entered the house, and three of them shot rounds at him, and those are fatal gun wounds. And then they sent a dog in to make contact with him. They weren't sure if he was alive or not. Mm-hmm. And there was just a lot of, and Don was on the scene for all mm-hmm. of this.
Sister.
Yeah. His sister was there. And afterwards she went into after they released the scene, there was, mm-hmm. there was a long investigation that lasted the entire night. And the next morning after they released the scene, she went into the house and started picking up things that she thought the police should have picked up, mm-hmm. including
as evidence, right?
Yeah, she saw it as evidence. Mm-hmm. There was a bullet shell casing that they hadn't been able to find that was in a laundry basket. Mm-hmm. There were several pieces of Donald's skull on the floor. It was a really gruesome scene, and she obviously was traumatized by it. Mm-hmm. But she also, like, she saw a lot of this left behind evidence yeah. as a sign of like an incomplete investigation. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to weigh in on any of that, mm-hmm. but in the aftermath of all of this, she was trying to do her own kind of citizen's investigation mm-hmm. of the case to figure out, she wants to know what really happened to her brother. Mm-hmm. And in November, the independent investigative body that investigated the scene turned their results mm-hmm. over to the county prosecutor, Larry Haskell. Mm-hmm. And he issued I think they turned that over in October, and he mm-hmm. issued a decision in November saying that the killing was justified. Larry Haskell is famous for never mm-hmm. having found police killing unjustified. Yeah. He's never prosecuted a police killing, which is an interesting fact in the context of Spokane being one of the most violent yeah. police forces or environments in the entire yeah. country. It's ranked number 3 in police departments nationwide. Mm-hmm. And that's when Don's mm-hmm. like interactions with the county became mm-hmm. just like, I mean, from her perspective, just she felt the county wasn't being forthcoming about the information. Mm-hmm. She asked to see the body cam footage, and Sheriff John Knowles said that she could come to his office and watch mm-hmm. it with him. She couldn't bring anybody with her, and she didn't like that setup, so she mm-hmm. she declined to do that. But her main efforts had been trying to mm-hmm. get the county prosecutor, Larry Haskell, yeah. to talk to her, just to yeah. sit down with her and have a conversation about like how mm-hmm. he came to the conclusions that he came to. And there's a report yeah. that he issued that explains his rationale, but she wants to hear it from him. She wants to like sit down mm-hmm. with him and look him in the eye. And he yeah. has...
Sorry, real quick. So we have a grieving sister mm-hmm. who's lost her brother. Her brother was in trouble, and he was facing a charge for pretty heinous crime mm-hmm. but I guess the fact of the matter is that when they were trying to get him to come in on his warrant, at some point in time they decided to go into that trailer house and open fire, and whether or not it would actually bring him in alive. And so this story was really interesting to edit, because we're like, it's brought up a lot of complicated feelings about like who gets sympathy in our society. And if you read the story, you'll see the charge, the warrant was for a child sexual assault. But the fact is also that everybody has the right to a trial and to
he was not convicted yet of that. So I want to bring that to the forefront because it was a big topic in our newsroom yesterday when we're editing and getting the story up, was like, how do we present this story? Like, how do we present the story with all the facts, but and not shy away from the scary and bad facts too? And so I kind of want to ask you, Hedge, like, before we get more deeper into the like legislation and things like that, that this story ties to, when Dawn approached you, like, how did she approach you, I guess, about this story?
Well, she did. I approached her. Okay. I met her at a protest. That kind of stemmed from another person's loved one having been killed by Spokane police. And it's a pretty tight-knit community. Mm-hmm. They hold regular protests on the day of the month that their loved one was killed. Mm-hmm. So Don holds one for Donald on the 29th of every month that he was killed on March 29th, 2024. And there's another person who has been a police accountability activist for a long time in Spokane. Her name is Debbie Novak. Her son David was killed by Spokane police in 2019. Mm-hmm. I believe that protest takes place on the 7th of the month, but I would need to check my notes. But Dawn was at Debbie's, the protest for Debbie's son. Mm-hmm. And they go to each other's protests.
Yeah.
There's a lot of solidarity. Mm-hmm. And I learned a little bit about Donald's case that day, and I went back, and after I wrote my first story, I read more about it, and I became interested, and so I went to a subsequent protest, one for Donald, and interviewed Dawn about it, and she kind of like laid out all of like just her experiences with the Spokane County Prosecutor's Office, and yeah, it was just like it was really striking that she was pouring all this energy into trying to like just find some clarity about what happened to her brother. She also wants justice, but I just found it to be a really compelling story. And so I went. I guess I went to her. She didn't approach me about it. She's a pretty quiet woman. Mm-hmm. She's not very like. She lives in Ford and she runs a couple of small businesses with her husband. She's just a regular person and she never thought that she was going to have to do something like this. And that's why the story kind of resonated with me, I guess.
And I appreciated how the story tied in with some legislation at Washington state legislation that is dead now and did not pass. But can you tell me a little bit about, I think there was four pieces of legislation that would have provided possibly another avenue for Dawn to go down to get some clarity on this, but other than prosecutor Larry Haskell, right?
Yeah. So probably need to like,
yeah, sorry. We might have to.
No. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of like complicated like context to this. So there was a lot of police accountability rules that were set in 2021, 2019 and 2021, those were like watershed years for police accountability in Washington. And they made like the activists who are pushing for police accountability made a lot of progress during those years. Mm-hmm. And one of the most significant things that kind of like slate of legislation did was it created this thing at the state level called the Office of Independent Investigations. Mm-hmm. And that was basically a body that could take deadly uses of force by police in any agency in Washington, and they can assign an investigator to go look into that case and figure out and make a determination whether it needs to be prosecuted. This was a really like important step, but it didn't get to the place where a lot of police accountabilities think it should, because when they issue a recommendation about whether a case should be prosecuted, it goes through a process. I think it hits the AG's office, but eventually it ends up in the hands of the local prosecutor. So any investigation of deadly use of force in Spokane County would come back to Larry Haskell, who again has never found a case worth prosecuting. And so it's likely that it would just go in this big mm-hmm. loop and just end up right back where it started and yeah. nothing would happen.
Because the statewide office does not have the authority to prosecute. Correct. It just has the authority to investigate.
Yes. And so the piece of the law that, or the bill that I was interested in mm-hmm. is it would create another body, not tangential, but just like adjacent to the Office of Independent Investigations, called the Office of Independent Prosecutions. Hmm. And that office would be able to do its own prosecution. It would employ lawyers who could go in and litigate a case if they felt that it warranted it. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out, like, I really wanted to write about Don's kind of like saga, mm-hmm. But I couldn't figure out a way to do it. But when this legislation died in February, I felt like that was, I mean, that's the thing that she mm-hmm. wants. She wants this other avenue where she can yeah. like try to figure out what happened to her brother, and if necessary, bring him mm-hmm. bring him some justice.
Has she ever tried to get the Office of Independent Investigations into this case? I know that they've only done like two or three cases since they started, but
yeah. So that office is mm-hmm. it's still in a really primitive state. Mm-hmm. It was formed in 2021, and it's really building some, it's building up. It is in the middle of its first two investigations. Those are both on the west side. And it's doing preliminary investigations into several other cases. And one of them is in Spokane County. It's David Novak's case. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if Don has reached out to the Office of Independent mm-hmm. Investigations, but they could investigate Donald's case.
Right. But then they would never be able to prosecute.
No, they wouldn't.
But I mean, in Don's case, like, she doesn't, I don't know if she's necessarily looking for a prosecution. She wants answers. Is that accurate or not?
Yeah. No. I think that's the first thing she wants. Yeah. She wants answers, and mm-hmm. she doesn't want to see anyone prosecuted if the facts don't lead to or don't warrant a prosecution. But mm-hmm. she wants the answers, and the mm-hmm. Office of Independent Investigations could ostensibly provide mm-hmm. some of those answers.
Yeah.
But if it reasoned that mm-hmm. the case needed to be prosecuted and that the shooting was not justified, mm-hmm. the case would come right back to Larry Haskell.
That would be an interesting, I'm really curious about what happens in the Novak case, because it would just be a test of this new system or office. And you might not know the answer to this question, but it just occurred to me. Do you know why in the legislation for the Office of Independent Investigations, why they didn't also include an Office of Prosecution or prosecution in that? Because I feel like those kind of go together, but they separated them.
Well, I mean, there was legislation that mm-hmm. year in 2021 that would have created
an office. Oh, so there was like a twin legislation. Situation.
Yeah, so there's been an independent prosecutor proposed for the last four legislative sessions.
Wow.
And it's died each time for different reasons. Huh. And they're a little bit in the weeds, like, In previous proposals, it didn't really have a home because mm-hmm. then Attorney General Ferguson felt like it would be a conflict of interest for the office to be housed within the department of, or the AG's office. And at the same time, so it would have had to been created under the office of the governor.
Okay.
And at the same time, former Governor Inslee felt the same way, that it would have been a conflict of interest for it to be housed under the governor's office. So that was one of the things that kind of like stopped it from happening. There's also like, and I've reported on this a little bit in other contexts, but mm-hmm. there were also like pretty heavy fiscal notes attached mm-hmm. to these bills. Agencies said that they would cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They've whittled that down a lot. Like the people proposing writing the legislation, the groups mm-hmm. Have like tried to lessen the costs, and they've done it. I think in previous years it would have, the fiscal notes were for like $9 million. Mm-hmm. This year it was for $3.5 million, which is a pretty dramatic reduction. But so this year it died in February because now legislators are even more hawkish mm-hmm. about the budget, and there's all kinds of stuff happening with the budget right now. Mm-hmm. Like different groups of Democrats have proposals to increase taxes on wealthy people in Washington, mm-hmm. but they're fighting about it. And, right. and they don't like, there isn't really a clear path out mm-hmm. of Washington's really dire budget situation. Right. There's a $12 million hole in the budget by some estimates.
I mean, and there's a way out, but I don't want to take it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody feels like the proposals that exist are the correct ones. So these bills are dying in mm-hmm. the context of lawmakers not wanting to spend right. more money.
And then on the flip side, we have a bill that's still sailing through legislation right now. People are still able to speak out for or against it and contact their legislators. Which bill is that? It's like HB 2015, right?
That's right. Yeah. So there's a little bit of irony here. Mm-hmm. There's a bill and now Governor Ferguson campaigned mm-hmm. on this. He said that he was going to be able to establish a fund mm-hmm. of $100 million at the state, just a grant fund for local governments to hire new police. And that original proposal was kind of like couched in a bill called SB 5060. Mm-hmm. And that bill died, mm-hmm. but then they created a new bill. Legislators in the House created a new bill that establishes a much smaller fund. It's mm-hmm. it's around $15 million between now mm-hmm. and 2031, I think. But it also allows it creates like special provisions for local mm-hmm. governments to create sales taxes to hire new police.
So just to be clear, and I don't think we like hashed it out in the story, but this bill, which is 2015, right?
Yes.
Okay. This one, is it actually allocating that $15 million, or is it just saying we can provide up to $15 million can be created by a new sales tax or whatever, local sales taxes? Like, how does that work?
The $15 million would be established in a grant fund from the state. So it's a lot less than the $100 million that Governor Ferguson campaigned on.
I see.
And in addition to that, it allows it allows local governments to...
So in the context... Sorry. Allow the local governments to do a sales tax, right?
Yeah, propose new taxes, yeah.
In the context of the budget deficit, where is this $15 million coming from?
I mean, the lawmakers are going to have to allocate it in the budget. I don't know exactly.
Sorry, I'm like putting you in the hot seat.
I don't know. That's all in flux right now, because they're crafting their budget proposals right now and they're debating them. And it's still not clear whether this bill will pass and be signed. Mm-hmm. But it's looking pretty good. It's sailing through committees. Yeah. I think it had a hearing in the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate. Right.
And so, that's like the last stop before it gets signed, I think, right?
Or before it gets debated on the floor of the Senate, yeah. And it'll, I think that most lawmakers that I've spoke to seem pretty hopeful for it. They think it's going to pass. So on the one hand, we have these pieces of accountability legislation, mm-hmm. and we should be clear, I spoke with Governor Ferguson's PIO, and she told me that Governor Ferguson also supported the accountability legislation. Mm-hmm. But those bills died because mm-hmm. the state didn't have enough money to pay for them, and this other funding bill is probably going to... It seems like it's doing well right now. I don't want to predict whether it's going to be signed and become law, but mm-hmm. it's doing a lot better than the other bills.
Yeah. It's interesting. I am interested in what our legislators are saying to rationalize that thing.
Well, and there's nuance to this bill. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just hire new police mm-hmm. officers. It also hires like behavioral health professionals and people who aren't necessarily cops to go mm-hmm. out and respond to bad situations. And every legislator that I talk to mm-hmm. says that those new positions need to be hired because police need mm-hmm. It shouldn't always just be cops going out and responding to every mental health crisis. It should be other professionals too.
Aaron Sellers, I think last year, did a ride along with the, I'm blanking on the name, but the
behavioral health. BRU, the BHU, the Behavioral Health Unit.
something like that. Yeah, okay. They did a ride along with them and experienced a day of responding to people in mental health crisis mm-hmm. who were in public and who would have otherwise had a police officer respond to them. And that's been a pretty effective program in Spokane. It's just interesting that this legislation, and we'd have to look at it more of just like, what's the ratio of adding behavioral health positions to and cops, like, you know, what's the ratio that this money's providing?
And it would depend on, yeah. on what the cities and counties and local agencies propose.
Interesting. Like
it's what they want. So right now, Spokane Valley is trying to create a tax to hire mm-hmm. specific numbers of different kinds of police. Most of them are patrol officers. But it just like, it depends on an analysis of what that local government yeah. would need. And that would probably be in a grant application.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not just here's $15 million to hire more police. It's these cities and counties have to apply to the state to get a grant to hire more police or whatever.
That's right.
That's interesting. I always find our granting system wild that things aren't just funded, that like cities have to apply for grants. I find it interesting.
It's a rigorous process.
Yeah.
Long process.
So back to this, the case of Donald Hagel. What's the biggest key takeaway, I guess, that affected you most while reporting this?
Well, I think there's all this wrangling about what the state is going to fund and what mm-hmm. it isn't. And what the priorities are and are we being fair to police? And I spoke with Debbie Novak for this story, and she told me that eventually it's going to have to be about not, it's going to have to not be about the police. It's going to have to be about the families that mm-hmm. are grieving their loved ones.
That quote was really powerful to me. Yeah.
And I think that like there's all this really complicated stuff happening mm-hmm. in the legislature that a lot of people, it's hard to follow. It's hard for me to follow. And I'm a reporter, like, it's my job to follow yeah. that stuff. And people like Don Hagel are just like tapping their feet. Mm-hmm. I mean, and sorry, that's probably like, I don't want to trivialize it, but mm-hmm. Like she doesn't know what's going on. And she yeah. feels, her case is interesting because she feels like a pretty high level of urgency to figure out mm-hmm. what happened to her brother. She's the only person in her family with the wherewithal to investigate this. Mm-hmm. She's in really bad health. She has a heart condition, and she's going in for a pretty invasive surgery at the end of May. She's either going to have a stent placed in her heart, and mm-hmm. if it's bad enough, they'll do a bypass. She doesn't mm-hmm. know if she's going to have the energy to do this after that. She doesn't know what life is going to be like after that, and mm-hmm. so she feels like she needs to figure this out just so her family can know what happens.
Yeah.
And it might not happen. She yeah. might not be able to.
Yeah, and it's a complicated process to follow. We were digging through court records and digging through different court records of Spokane County and Stevens County, and they both have different systems.
It was a wild scene in the newsroom yesterday. Aaron Sellers and Val were just like going at all these records, and yeah. it was just like trying to build a narrative and figure out what happened
yeah.
to Donald in the lead up to his,
because we were trying to figure out
yeah
and we talk about it in the story, sorry, I'm gonna get all, I wish I had the timeline wrote down, but yeah. about 3 years prior in 2019 or 2018,
it was five years prior, 2019, yeah.
right? So 2019, Donald Hagel had a standoff with police mm-hmm. before. This happened before. Yep. Again, they thought
one of the same deputies who killed mm-hmm. him was involved in that standoff as well.
Yes. And
Travis
so
West.
They also thought he had a weapon, and it also ended up not being a weapon during that time. And they were trying to bring him in on the warrant for the same charge that they were bringing him in for this time. And so they managed to bring him in. They did, you know, smoke grenades and all that stuff.
Yep.
And they brought him in, and we were trying to figure out, well, how did he get out of jail? how did we get from 2019 being in jail to 2024 and dying again at the hands of the police for the same warrant, the same charge? And we dug through court records and found out that basically when he was arrested the first time in 2019 for this warrant,
After his first standoff, yeah.
It was a standoff, and they brought him in, and he was also charged with, in relation to that standoff, with, like, resisting arrest or something like that, right?
Criminal mischief. And he had, like, he'd gotten into a physical fight mm-hmm. with one of the officers. Okay. And he pleaded guilty to that.
Right. So he pleaded guilty to those charges. And those charges were in Spokane County. So this is how complex the court system is, because everything is county by county. Mm-hmm. So he pleaded guilty to those charges in Spokane County. He spent like 76 days in jail, something like that. And then he gets transferred to Stevens County. And we're like, okay, well, where is he at in Stevens County at this point in time? And then figured out that in about May 2020, he was able to get bailed out by his sister on a $100,000 bond. And our biggest question in this is, with the severity of the charge and the fact that he already resisted arrest in the standoff, why was he allowed out on bond? And that's something we weren't able to answer, right?
No, we didn't. I mean, we didn't figure out the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, in Stevens County, so here's how I see it. Mm-hmm. So in Spokane County, he pleaded guilty and he stood trial for his charge of criminal mischief mm-hmm. that stemmed from the standoff, which was right. a separate thing from the warrant that they were there to arrest mm-hmm. him on, which was the sexual assault of a child. Mm-hmm. And he served 76 days mm-hmm. in the Spokane County Jail, and the judge let him out on time served.
Right.
Since he pled, I think probably because he pled guilty. Mm-hmm. And after that, he was transferred straight to Stevens County. Mm-hmm. And so they decided to post bond for him for $100,000 mm-hmm. and he was in custody there for a completely different
right.
crime.
But it was for the crime that they went after him for the warrant, or that he had both police standoffs.
That's right.
Because of.
Yes.
So, and then we're here in 2024 and he's at another, and during that time between when he was bonded out and 2024, like there, we were looking at the court records of continuance here, continuance there, trial date set, trial date missed, like things like that were happening. And I think his sister told you like some of the reasons why he wasn't like actually showing up for court and things like that.
He missed some court dates because mm-hmm. she said that he wasn't able to make the drive to mm-hmm. Colville. And so he missed enough court mm-hmm. dates that they eventually rescinded his bond mm-hmm. and issued a warrant for his arrest. Mm-hmm. And that's what led us to March 29th, 2024, which right. is when he died.
Yeah. So it's just another, not just, but this is another illustration of how our court system is wonky in those ways, I think.
I've been reporting on a lot of stories about mm-hmm. how the systems that exist, these like very kind of diffuse mm-hmm. systems of policing and of mm-hmm. mental health and of courts, like people fall through the cracks because yeah. it's so complicated. And often there are people who just, they're having a rough time with life mm-hmm. and they're not like they're not perfect people, and they mm-hmm. like they have problems. Donald's his toxicology report showed methamphetamine and mm. and alcohol.
I noticed a heart condition too.
Yeah, but there's multiple stories mm-hmm. of police killing people who have been repeatedly failed by the systems yeah. that exist.
And you said he only had a sixth grade education.
Yes,
is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So, interesting story. We're going to pivot now to our second story, which also has a little bit to do with police funding, but it's right here in Spokane Valley, or we're in Spokane. It's right next door to Spokane Valley. There we go.
yeah, our city to the east.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So every Monday, Range goes through all of the public meetings that are happening in our region. I mean, not every single one, but almost every single one. So we do Spokane City Council, we do Spokane Valley City Council, we do the school boards, things like that. And this Monday, we noticed Spokane Valley had on their agenda two important items. And the first is very interestingly connected to the second, I think. I just thought it was the funniest thing.
You're not the only one. There was a lot of okay. people at the meeting who pointed yeah. the same thing out.
I was just like, this is opposite things. It's not funny in like haha, but funny in like this is messed up. So the first item, what was the first item?
So Spokane Valley is in the middle of a three-phase plan to fully hire like a complete police department, because
they contract with the county, right?
Yeah, they so the Spokane Valley Police Department is technically under the umbrella of the Spokane County Sheriff's Office, but it is its own entity and they share resources, they share officers, but they do have their own dedicated force.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, like the city, if you talk to any of the city council members in Spokane Valley, they will tell you that between 2008 and basically the start of this program, which started last year, they didn't hire any new police officers. They didn't hire any additional police officers.
Oh, got it. Okay. Like that's
but old police force. And at the same time, the population of Spokane Valley grew a lot.
I see.
And so there are a lot of people in Spokane Valley is a conservative place. There's a lot of people there who feel like the police force needs to be a lot more robust than it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they embarked on this project to basically like bring it up to what they would see as like speed for like, and this city council identified public safety as their number one priority. Mm-hmm. And they see cops as being central to that.
Mm-hmm. They want to be a big kid city.
Yeah. I mean, well, and like services everywhere are like eroded, but they really want to hire a lot of new cops. And they hired 10 new officers last year, dedicated ones, and two that they share with the Spokane County Sheriff. They want to hire more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And to hire the 10 that they hired last year, they cut a lot from other programs. Mm-hmm. And there's basically no fat left in the budget to do that again. So they can't really cut from, or this is what,
off the top of your head, what programs they cut from?
I'm still in the middle of reporting
right,
out. But the city managers will tell you that there's really nothing left to cut from the budget unless they start cutting aquatics or like just like important programs for like or parks or just things that people also need.
Mm-hmm.
And this is controversial on the city council. Like there's at least one member that feels like there is more to cut, and he went, city council member Al Merkel wants them to like zero out the budget,
jeez,
fully fund the police department, and then like figure out which other programs are, oof, like what leftover can be doled out to the other programs.
Okay.
And he talked about this on Tuesday night. But so the second phase, one of the proposals to fund more police, and I can't remember the exact number, but I know that they want 9 new patrol officers and some other types of officers, including a behavioral health specialist.
Mm-hmm.
They want to propose a new tax, a 0.1% tax, so that equates to about 10 cents out of $100 for sales, sales tax, to hire these new officers. Taxes are unpopular in Spokane Valley, but I think police are more popular than the taxes are unpopular. And this,
it's a fun little seesaw.
So that's the first resolution that they
or that was,
and this is like, sorry, this is a ballot initiative that they want to put to the voters.
Oh, is it a ballot initiative?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So this
would be, if they do it, it'll be on the August 5th election.
Got it.
And the voters will decide whether that gets implemented.
Okay. So, and this meeting on Tuesday night, they were having, I think, the first public hearing for that, right?
They voted on language for the ballot initiative.
Oh, interesting. I thought they were just having a public hearing.
It was a public hearing, but they've held readings for it before.
Got it.
Before.
Okay, so that, did they cover that item first, or did they cover the other item first?
That was the first item they covered.
Oh, interesting. That's not how it was, I think, in the agenda.
Yeah, it was the first thing they talked about on Tuesday night.
That's so funny. Okay, so let's talk about the second thing they talked about.
So the other one, so this has a little bit of a history to it. In 2016, the Spokane Valley City Council voted in a resolution that declared that Spokane Valley is not a sanctuary city, which is basically, it's a term that describes a government that, or a place where the law enforcement agencies And there are several definitions, but in this mm-hmm. context, where law enforcement agencies do not help mm-hmm. the federal government to enforce immigration law.
Yeah.
And so...
And these laws, or in these sanctuary city policies, I think, I don't know if they're policies or laws technically, but those were created so that people who are undocumented wouldn't be afraid to, like, call 911 for when they need help and
exactly.
things like that, because they were afraid of getting deported as a result. So that was the reasoning behind sanctuary cities.
So that's the, yeah, that's why sanctuary mm-hmm. cities or states or counties mm-hmm. exist, is to, like, provide some level of safety for migrants who mm-hmm. might be undocumented. We live in a context where even documented migrants are being mm-hmm. rounded up and deported, people who are here legally. But so that was in 2016. In 2019, I believe it was, mm-hmm. the state created, the Washington State Legislature created a sanctuary law. It's called the Keep Washington Working Act. And that act made it so that no law enforcement mm-hmm. jurisdictions in the state could help federal agents locate or deport immigrants mm-hmm. who are undocumented. And so the entire state, it became a sanctuary state, essentially. But the resolution that the Spokane Valley City Council had been stayed in place, mm-hmm. They just couldn't enforce it because that would cut against the Keep Washington Working Act, the state law.
Okay.
So fast forward to today, that original resolution was still on mm-hmm. the books, and an item was on the agenda for Tuesday night, saying mm-hmm. just like replacing that resolution with a new resolution. This basically
the 2016 resolution.
Yeah. Okay. It gets rid of the 2016 resolution and creates mm-hmm. a new, and this is like, it doesn't have any teeth. It's really mm-hmm. just a statement, but it's a resolution that says it like reaffirms that Spokane Valley is not a sanctuary city mm-hmm. and that it's going to encourage its police forces to help other agencies to enforce immigration law within the confines of state law. So, and that's basically an admission saying mm-hmm. we know that the state law does not allow us to do this, mm-hmm. but we wish we could.
Yeah. And Aaron Sellers put it in a good way, or a way that I liked, is that this was more of a value statement than like an action, but it's still a bold value statement in this climate, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially saying that like, what it means is that Spokane Valley doesn't like the mm-hmm. Keep Washington Working Act. It wants mm-hmm. it wants its police forces to help federal agents round up and deport mm-hmm. migrants.
And so they started talking about this resolution after they had a public comment hearing or a public hearing about a new sales tax that they want voters to vote yes on to provide more funding for police officers, for more police officers. And then shortly after they talked about the resolution mm-hmm. about they want their police officers to help federal officials deport people. So
yeah.
Tell me, we haven't actually caught up since I think Tuesday night on this or had a chance to really dig in. Can you tell me like, what was the sentiment at the meeting Tuesday night?
So I don't go to Spokane Valley City Council meetings often, mm-hmm. but I have been a number of times and I've never seen it like this. The room was packed. Mm-hmm. Most of the seats were full. People were lining the walls and they heard for the sanctuary city resolution, they mm-hmm. heard 31 public comments. Mm-hmm. 29 of them were like vehemently against it. A lot of those folks were from, I would say about half of them were from outside mm-hmm. of Spokane Valley. Again, Spokane Valley is a conservative place. I imagine a lot of voters there would support this resolution. But the people who showed up to city council on Tuesday night were not those people.
Yeah.
And they cut the public, Mayor Pam Haley cut the public comment period from 3 minutes to 1 minute to accommodate everybody. Mm-hmm. So they read really fast from their statements.
Yeah, yeah.
Squeezing 3 minutes of comments into 1 minute. And it was funny, Mayor Haley like commended them on how fast they were going. And a lot of them were identified the same connection that you identified. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how do you expect us to vote on on extra taxes for mm-hmm. new cops when you're just creating extra work mm-hmm. for them to enforce laws that are not in their jurisdiction.
Right.
So that was one of the contentions. Mm-hmm. Most of it was more like concerned with just like the human aspect of mm-hmm. it. Like immigrants are here in good faith. They want, like, by and large, they commit less crime yep. than other communities. They came here because they wanted to better their lives, mm-hmm. by and large. They're human beings. Some of them
yeah.
commit crimes just like Americans do. Yeah. But everybody yeah. wanted the city council to support them rather than saying, like, we want to help deport mm-hmm. people. It was pretty contentious.
Yeah. What were the people who were in support of this thing? I don't know.
Well, so a couple of people, so two of the 31, you mean the people during public comment?
Yeah, sorry.
They basically said that the federal government has primacy over mm-hmm. local governments, which is like, and basically saying that like that means that city governments should help force and enforce federal law, which, like, it doesn't, jurisdictions money. Don't work that way. But the reason this was proposed, it came from city council member Jessica Yeager, who mm-hmm. she's known for having established the Moms for Liberty chapter in Spokane yeah. Valley, which is like an anti-trans mm-hmm. Activist group. She said that she wanted to advance this resolution because she wanted to keep federal funds flowing into Spokane Valley because the Trump administration had threatened to had threatened to cut federal funding off from sanctuary jurisdictions. Mayor Pam Haley had a different reason. She said this resolution brings Spokane Valley into compliance with the Keep Washington Working Act, which it does. A lot of folks were wondering why they didn't just repeal the old resolution, yeah. and she didn't answer that question, but they voted up both measures. It fell. Go ahead.
Oh, did they provide any rationale for the two together at the same time?
No, they didn't talk about that. I mean,
they didn't like talk about it in the context of each other, right?
No, okay. No. I don't think they saw them as connected, really.
Mm, fascinating.
Or it didn't seem that way. But a lot of the community did see them as having some overlap. It fell along predictable lines. So mm-hmm. so council members, Deputy Mayor Hattenberg, who's the sole liberal, he's not super lefty, but he's moderate. Mm-hmm. He's registered as a Democrat. And Ben Wick, who's a kind of a moderate conservative, both voted against mm-hmm. the Sanctuary City resolution, and everybody else voted for it. Interestingly, Councilmember Al Merkel, he didn't want to vote for it because he didn't feel like it did anything, and it doesn't do anything. Like the city's operations are not going to yeah. change because of this resolution. He didn't want to vote for it, but he did vote for it because he did a next door poll, and most of the people who responded to it in his constituency supported the resolution. And he said, mm-hmm. I work for my constituents, and so I'm voting for it. But he told me later that he wouldn't have if he hadn't received that feedback.
And with the sales tax, what was the public comment real quick before we run out of...
Most people were folks were in support of it.
In the sales tax?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
They want more cops.
Okay. Fascinating.
Councilmember Al Merkel voted against it because okay. he didn't feel like they'd done their homework in trying to cut more from the budget, but yeah.
Huh. I am always fascinated by the rationales of other people.
The dynamics are very interesting. But I think we're yeah. at the top or at the end of the show, so... Yes,
that's our time for this week. Free Range is a weekly news and public affairs program presented by Range Media and produced by Range Media and KYRS Community Radio. Thanks for listening today, guys.
Bye, everyone.